The hardest thing in the world, in the church, is to get good leaders. They have to be men of prayer, courage, and brains. They gotta know their theology. And that's all the things that Paul just said here, right? Timothy is the bishop of Thessalonica, I think it was. And so now he's got to appoint other bishops. And so Paul gives this description. And it just happens to be, because that's the regular reading for the day, on the feast of a saintly bishop, Robert Bellarmine, who was a cardinal. And so, whoever aspires to the office of bishop desires a noble task. Now, if he's eaten up with ambition, he's not going to exercise it as a noble task. But the task is noble, to serve God's people. The primary task of the bishop is to preach and teach. That's his primary job. Well, you can see what happens. I mean, look at any diocese, you know, there's the administration, the problems, the fight with the government. I mean, there's so many other things that it's very hard for him to do what is his primary duty, teach. Now, our bishop tries really hard. He writes books, even, you know, because he can't. He has to exercise a teaching ministry in another way at times. Why? You see, the whole thing hangs on purity of faith. If we get mixed up about faith, it's over. And that's why the primary duty of the bishop is to teach. Keep people thinking correctly about God, about Jesus, about redemption, about the moral life. Fight all the time. Because if purity of life and purity of doctrine can be corrupted, the church is finished. And so that's why we pray every day for our bishop. It's a heck of a job. And so, you see, married only once. In the early days, the bishops were married, but there was a preference for those who weren't. And finally, it turned out to be, now, in the West, all the priests, and therefore the bishops, because they're chosen from the priests, are celibate. In the East, you have your choice. You're in the seminary, and it comes your third or fourth year, and if you want to be married, you take a year off, go find a wife, and come back, and finish your studies. But you can never be a bishop. That's the Eastern discipline. In the West, everybody has to be celibate. Why? Get more work done? No. Witness to the all-sufficiency of Christ. That's why. And so, because maybe we won't get more work done. You know, maybe some hard-working married deacon will be doing more than we do. I'll challenge that some days, though, I'll bet you I tell you. But it's got nothing to do with efficiency. It's got something to do with the all-sufficiency of Christ. And that's why a bishop wears a ring on his right hand. He's married to the diocese. And so he has to have these skills. And he can't practice them in his family when he becomes a bishop because he's not married. And either, East or West. But he has to be able to manage the diocese. And while the primary goal of all of that is spiritual growth, it involves salaries and buildings and, you know, and that's why we always pray. And when a bishop is really holy, the whole diocese is different. Because most of his priests will look up to him and follow him. He's not just an administrator. That's why this Paul is writing the way he is, you see. People who have these offices, and then he moves on. You see, he only talks about episkopos and diakonos. He doesn't talk about presbyteros. Because things were not as clear. The three orders, bishop, priest, and deacon, were not as clear in those days as yet. But it was perfectly clear what the job was, to bear witness to the wonder, the beauty, the truth, the saving power, and the all-sufficiency of Christ. That's the basic job. Now, day after day, you get tangled up with, you know, mortgages and discipline and some priest doing something wrong and, you know. But the Roman Church has not done badly, all things considered. And there's many of our saints who are priests and bishops, as we have today. But this is a beautiful, you see, temperate, self-controlled, decent, hospitable, able to teach, which is the primary function of the bishop. Not a drunkard, not aggressive, but gentle. Not contentious, not a lover of money. That's a big one. Why? I have a friend, and he was telling me, he was first made pastor where he had been assistant. And he said, you know, I wondered why I was kind of shocked at the way the pastor was concerned about money. He said, and then the first Sunday Mass I had when I was pastor, and I'm holding up the offer, you know, the bread and the wine, and I'm looking over to see how big the collection basket is. He says, now I understand. It's not for his own comfort. He's got to pay all the bills. So that's why we pray for them. And those who are faithful to the Lord, bless their people. I only want to say a word about this gospel because, it's not bad. I got some time left. Nain is up in the north, this town. It's still a little town to this day. And he had a big crowd. Jesus had a big crowd with him, and he's walking up. It's north. South of Nazareth, sort of southeast of the Sea of Galilee. It's in that region there. And a man who had died was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. In other words, now, in that culture, there's no one to look after her. You know, if she had some brothers, and they'll help out. But and so when the Lord saw her, and again we have this saying, it was translated, he was moved with pity for her. This is God. He sees this human dilemma. But he's God. And he's moved with pity for her. He knows the situation. If he didn't, somebody would tell him, but he does. And so he stops the whole thing. And he goes over there and he says, young man, I say to you, arise. And this man comes back to life. Well, that's why it says, see, and the report spread out through the whole of Judea. Judea is the south. Of course it spread throughout Galilee where Nain is. He raised the dead. Jesus. Why? Because he saw this woman had no one to care for her. And that's, you know, in that culture particularly, that's terrible. So he raised the young man and gave him back to his mother to care for her. You see, Jesus still has those emotions. I don't know how to explain this. He's moved with pity for us. He loves us. He cares about us. And that's why he wants us to be relating to him, talking to him, taking time to be with him, learning from him, asking him questions, learning what his affection really is all about. That's the only thing that will really change us. You know, we'll try hard to be moral and we'll keep the rules and all the rest, but holiness only comes when you love Jesus.